I'm Howard Haley, and thanks for joining me for today's edition of the Horseman's Corner. On the program today, first half of the program, a California horseman, Bruce Sandifer, who trains in the old Californio style, turns out bridle horses. Second half of the program, a Colorado horseman who has a different kind of clientele than Bruce Sandifer would have. But let's get started with Bruce Sandifer here on the first half of the program. Bruce, where do you live in California? Bruce, give me a little bit of your background, will you, and how you got to the point where you are now, where you're putting on some clinics and what you're doing.
Well, I don't do a whole lot of clinics or anything. Mostly I teach here from home. But I spent a lot of years just cowboying on big outfits, cowboying in Buckaroo all over the country, and fate landed me here in Santa Barbara, and it was a real cradle of the Californio style, something that's always been a big interest of mine. I got to looking around, and I'm going, wow, there's nobody doing this here anymore. I thought that just didn't seem right because it was such an influential area. The history was so deep, and so I had the opportunity and the time to really study and develop and experiment with a lot of the old Californio style, and I just found out it was such a really good working style for today's people, the way people ride today. It still held all the credit as far as just being a really horse-friendly and rider-friendly style, although it takes a little bit to get started in it.
Let's give the folks and me included a background on the Californio style. What are you talking about?
Here in the Central Coast or the coast of California, during the mid-17 and to the end of the 1800s, there developed a style of horsemanship, which I find to be completely unique from any others. They were isolated here, and being that they did not have a lot of natural resources, steel was almost just non-existent for a long time. They became the Padres, brought cattle here, and they multiplied because of the climate here so quickly that they had to enlist a lot of the Indian converts over to vaqueros. And these guys basically rode in hackamores and rawhide nosebands. They developed this series of working with this hackamore that just made fantastic horses. When steel became more readily available, they developed a particular kind of spay bit here that worked exactly like the hackamore. So it just became a really unique system based on balance instead of pressure. And that really intrigues me a lot.
That's an interesting background. So these guys really kind of had to start from a ground zero and develop their own style, if I'm understanding you correctly?
Well, that's what I feel. I think, you know, there's the Spanish influence, of course, with the Padres and the soldiers that were here. So they had, you know, some basic horsemanship, some good high school-type skills, you know, from those military men. But they really had to adapt it to what was available to them here and the jobs they did, which was basically just harvesting hide and tallow in pretty rough country. I think a lot of it developed because, quite frankly, to the Spaniards, the horse was way more valuable than the person riding it at that time. So that they really instilled in these early Californios the preservation of the horse. You know, preservation of its mouth, its body, its mind.
That is very interesting, and I suppose, I suppose there are times today that the horse is more valuable than the person that's riding it.
Well, you know, everybody's got a little bit different perspective on that for sure, but what intrigues me so much about it is that how it relates to horses. When you use a balance system and a system of, you know, where it's not about pressure or force, they respond so well to it. And I ride a lot of horses that I've never seen or been on before. At some of my workshops, people will show up with horses. And generally, you know, they're not bronky horses or anything. They're just horses that have been trained in all sorts of different ways. and I can get on them. If I try to find their balance point and how they work, they respond to it almost instantly. So I feel it gives a rider a lot of communication without a lot of effort.
Are you just kind of trying to stay out of that horse's way? Is that what you're talking about on this balance side of things?
Well, absolutely. But you're also, instead of using force to change the horse's action, say a stop, a turn, or something like that, you're changing your balance. So if you stay in the horse's center of balance, and it's in the middle of you, basically, both ways, side to side and forward and back, and to initiate a change, you get slightly out of its balance, that horse will seek the center of you. So if you get slightly out of balance, come back to the center, it will start to look for your center and respond off of that signal.
Interesting. What
reins just become, the reins basically just become a way to connect your body to the horse's front end.
You started then with the hackamore just like the old Californios did.
Yes, sir. I feel that because a hackamore is a balance-based piece of equipment, you know, it has a balance point off the tip of the nose, and it rocks, basically, you know, off the tip of the nose when the heel knot comes up, and then it goes back to a neutral position. And there's also a position of least resistance inside that hackamore. Think of a horse reaching up and you know, kind of getting high and putting its head in a bucket. So it does that, and it comes in there, and there's a point there where it doesn't hit the sides of that hackamore. And if you can teach a horse to seek that position, that is a very good frame for a horse to be in. It's an athletic frame. And they'll start to hunt that. So we use that way of going, and we always do everything through the center of the horse, through the horse's spine instead of around it. So it really gets them used to staying together, so to speak.
Is there a progression of hackamores that you use dependent on the age of the horse or how far he is along?
Well, generally we start in a 3/4 or 5/8, you know, move to a 1/2 inch. As the horse gets more in tune with the signals, and then we go to a 3/8 that we use to bring the horse into the bridle. As soon as the horse responds and acts and understands the balance changes through the series of hackamores, then we put it into a 2-rein and a spade bit. And the spade bit, people look at it and they think, oh, it's kind of a scary bit for a lot of people, but really it's just a balance bit. It's not it's probably the softest bit I can think of. If you really test it out, you can see that just, you know, that pressure divided over more area creates less pressure at any point.
The spade bit does look like it's a heck of a mouthful, and there are different types of spades, are there not?
Generally, there's spoon spades and alligator spades. We use a type of spade that was actually pretty much a copy of our Merduenio style spade bit. A friend of mine, Bruce Hainer, makes them here locally. And they have exactly the same balances and ratios as, say, a bit made in the 1850s or 60s. They're usually a 1.5 to 2 to 1 ratio of pressure. If you take a pound on the reins, you'll feel 2 pounds or 1.5 pounds in the horse's mouth, you know, if you do have to take a hold. And basically that leverage is just there to remind the horse to listen to the balance.
With these spade bits, there's some pretty good warning for the horse, is there not?
There's a lot of pre-signal, yeah. If you take one inside and put it between your 2 hands, you can lift your reins, oh, you know, 1/4 inch, and you can feel that easily all the way up through the bridle. It's developed to be a signal bit. It's not really a very good leverage bit, and that's kind of why it's gone by the wayside. You know, it's just not very good to pull on a horse with, but it's really good to signal them with.
How far do you go with a hackamore? Maybe this is a dumb question, but then I ask a lot of dumb questions. How long does it usually take you to get a horse to the point where he's ready to go from the hackamore to the spade?
Well, a lot of that depends on the horse and, you know, how good a job I do, basically. But you're looking at a year, year and a half, 2 years in the Hackamore. It's not something that you want to stay in too awful long, although ridden right, you can ride them for their whole lives in a Hackamore. But for me, I like to go in when they're the best they're going to be. When they're really, you know, before they start to get heavy at all, I want them. The best that horse is ever going to be is going to be in the Hackamore. And when I put that bridle on, I want to use that bridle to preserve that and to allow me, I use it as an amplifier so I can use less signal to do the same thing.
Bruce, time for us to take a break. Let's get that done. And you folks stay tuned because we'll have more from Bruce Sandifer in just a moment. You're listening to the Horseman's Corner. I'd like to invite you to visit the Horseman's Corner often because there's new content on there 6 days a week and also some good horses for sale. Horsemanscorner.com, a good place for you to visit, a good place for you to get information about horses and horsemanship. So I'd invite you to go to the internet and visit Horsemanscorner.com. That's Horsemanscorner.com.
I want to tell you about a horse sale, a very special select sale that's coming up in February. It's the Mile High Select Sale, February 19th, 2022, at the Ranch, Larimer County Fairgrounds and Events Complex. If you have one or more that might fit their criteria, please use their consignment form on MileHighSelectSale.com. That's Mile High Select Sale from Harley D. Troyer Auctioneers.
Welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program, and with me, Bruce Sandifer, a California horseman who trains in the California style. Bruce, how old do you like to have your horses be before you start riding them?
We generally start our horses around 4 years old. And a lot of the reason is for that is that if I ride them a year and a half, 2 years, by the time they're ready for the bridle, their teeth are all in and set, and I've never really, you know, their mouth is fresh. We don't use anything but spay bits. We go right from a Hackamore to the spade, and then the spay bit will be that horse's bridle, the same bridle for the rest of its life.
No snaffle bit at all in the progression?
No, sir. Snaffle bit doesn't work off of balance. It doesn't have a balance point, so it doesn't rotate anywhere. The reins are stuck to the side of the horse's head instead of the bottom like a bridle or a Hackamore. So it basically works on direct pull. So I don't feel it really works into the system as it was intended to be used. But, you know, you can, of course, get great results with one. I've seen it lots of times.
You say you start them at 4 years of age. What do you do with your younger horses, the twos and threes?
We have a limited amount of space here where I live, but so they get handled quite a bit. You know, I like them to be tied, and we'll saddle them up and make sure that you can work with their feet and stuff. So they're pretty much, by the time they're four, they're kind of begging to be rode more than anything else. You know, they really, I used to start a lot of two-year-olds and start a bunch of colts for trainers and stuff, and I found that these four-year-olds, for me, they're a lot easier to handle. They don't have that squirtiness, and they just stay sounder, you know. I just think that I would rather have that horse on its trained end, you know, the end when it's finished, that 25-year-old horse still sound, than get more out of my babies.
They will stay sound and very workable. They'll lure up into their lower to mid-20s, won't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, if you look at, well, like older Olympic horses, you know, most of those aren't even competing at Olympic level till they're 16, 17 years old because they started much later. So I would rather have it on the end when they're more pleasant and trained to ride than in the beginning when they're, you know, they're snappy and they're fun, but they're, I don't want to wear them out by the time they're 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, what events? Are there any events that you compete in? Is there any of that at all?
I did rent cow horse for a while, and I just found that the schedule there didn't really match what I do. And I show in some of the ranch type ropings and things like that and stock horse events that they have around. We have a few that are kind of geared for this style. In fact, we just developed a nonprofit organization to put on more events that are real adaptable for people that want to, you know, to get out and share with other people this style and have some fun working at it. It's the International Association for the Preservation of the Early California Bridle Horse and Stock Horse. Big long name.
Yeah, that is, but is there a short way that people can get to it?
Well, we're working on the website now. It's a pretty new progress. We've just got it kind of put together, so there will be some ways where people can get on there and, you know, find out more about it. We have some kind of looser rules. You can stay in the Hackamore longer. You can drop back from the two rein to the Hackamore. Things that you can't do in most organizations, you know, because what we're really concerned about is, you know, that the horse has the best chance to get as trained as well as he can.
You know, your
competition end.
That's when you're talking about what you guys are trying to accomplish with your Bozells and your Hackamores and your Spade Bits. And of course, we have the term natural horsemanship out there. But when we're talking about what the Dorrances did and what you guys are doing, we're talking about basically the same philosophy, are we not?
Well, sure, a lot of the same philosophy, a lot of different mechanics. You know, basically, we want the best for the horse. We want the horse to be the most useful and content animal it can be, while still retaining a lot of performance. So we really are performance-oriented because this is a working style. It's a style that works on ranches, and it's very applicable to today's working horse. But it's also a very nice style for people that enjoy working with their horses and want to build a better communication with them.
Bruce, where you put on a lot of workshops, what's some of the big mistakes? What are some of the things that people need to be looking out for? What's some of the mistakes that are most obvious to you that a lot of people make with their horses?
I think the biggest thing is they pull horses out from underneath themselves a lot of times. The most content place for a horse to be is in the middle with your weight squarely over the top of it. And most people, I would say the biggest problem is people look away to where they want to go, and then they pull the horse underneath them. So they're not keeping that horse. You know, you wouldn't look away from your car, you know, and make a turn. You have to watch that car and guide that car through that turn. So I think the most important thing is keeping a horse underneath you and not pulling it away from your own spine, because that ruins a person's balance, and it also affects the horse's balance. That's probably the biggest problem I see.
Okay, let me see if I'm understanding this correctly. When you say looking away, let's say I've got point B or a post that I want to go to over, maybe 100, 200 feet from me. I should focus on that and stay centered on that, and the horse will stay with me?
Well, yeah. There's actually, what you don't want to do is focus so much on the horse. Is what you want to do is sight down that horse. I say that your reins are like the back sight, your V in your hands where your reins are, and the horse's ears are the front sight. So you want to point your gun where you want to shoot. And, you know, a lot of people point their eyes where they want to shoot, but the horse is going a different place. So I think it's real important to line that the sights of your gun up to where you want to ride to. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does, and that's a good analogy. I don't want to look down at the ears, but want to look through the ears to the point where I'm going, and if I'm balanced, if I'm over the center of the horse like it should be, he's going to go there automatically, I would think.
Yeah, basically it just takes away all the pulling, and, you know, I think that if you reach out with your hand, a lot of people, what they'll do is they look over and then they reach away from the horse's spine with their hand. And when they do that, basically they're putting all their weight on the foot that they need to move. You know, when as soon as you reach out with your hand, your weight's going to go to your inside foot and put weight on that horse's inside front leg, on that shoulder. So that'd be like sitting in a chair and you want to pick up the right front leg of that chair and leaning over it to do it. It's, you know, it makes it a lot more difficult for the horse, so the horse has to fill in a lot more for the rider.
By gosh, these horses do a good job of filling in for us a lot of the time, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it amazes me what they will do and what they will put up with, you know. And when you give them just a little bit of an opening, a place that's easier for them, they just go there every single time.
Bruce, this has been a lot of fun. We're running out of time for this segment of the Horseman's Corner. But gosh, it's been a lot of fun talking to you. Going to have to come back and do it again. And what I would like to do is have you give me a call when you get your website up for the organization you're putting together and a place where people can go and see it. Then let's talk some more.
Absolutely. I sure enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is interesting. I had no idea. You've done a good job of explaining to me, at least, and I hope the listeners as well, that what the Californio style of horsemanship is. And I didn't really understand it. This has been a real enlightenment for me.
Well, I'm glad I was able to shed a little light on it. I'm basically, you know, I'm a student of it myself. It's just one of those things. I feel like I've just barely scratched the surface. These guys were probably the best natural horsemanship. You know, we talk about that natural horsemanship. I think they were the best that's ever been, because horses just respond to it so quickly, and they don't, you know, they've never read any books or seen the videos yet, so.
Do you have any books or videos out there?
Well, I just have one short one right now, and mainly it just explains a little bit about how different bits work inside the horse's mouth. I have a skull that I've made into a teaching model and put, you know, it shows how what kind of pressure different bits put on the horse's bars and tongues, and it kind of how they react inside of a horse's mouth, just to give people a little better understanding about what's happening in their horse's mouth when they pull on.
Bruce, how did they get it?
Well, it's available through Hitching Post Supply in Washington and Eclectic Horseman magazine.
Now, how about your website?
I have a website at it's Bruce Sandifer. CBH.com.
California Horseman Bruce Sandifer, good to have him with us on the program. It's time to close out today's program. I'm Howard Hale, host of the show. I'll say goodbye. May God bless. See you next week. Same time, same place.